Today's show is about housing. We know it is one of the biggest concerns for not just British Columbians, for Canadians, but this podcast is specifically about British Columbia. I think we should touch on John Rustad's announcement yesterday just because it's so huge. I think we should talk about that. I think we should take the air out of it a little bit, if I'm being honest with you. And then we can focus on the NDP if that's good with you.
Yeah, that's totally fine with me. I was just reading about it this morning, actually. Sounds really good and glossy on the surface. Let's put it that way. But when you drill, so the John Rustad came out yesterday and announced the conservative housing policy that what he wants to do for renters and homeowners in British Columbia, and that is offer a tax credit starting at immediate, I think it was immediately $1,500 a month tax credit for building up to $3,000 a month tax credit. And his campaign is saying that that's going to save the average taxpayer in British Columbia, average household, $1,600 to $1,800 a year. Now, my problem with it, and I was reading an article from City News, and they talked to some housing experts from SFU and UBC, and there's a few things wrong with this. One is that it's very vague on what is going to be considered qualifying household costs. It says that in there. It says that in the wording, is that it's for eligible household costs, but it doesn't go into any detail of how, what is and isn't eligible. The second problem is that he refuses to say how he's going to fund it. And since we already know that BC is in a deficit, EB's running on has a deficit, right? They took a gamble to help British Columbians and we have a deficit. Rustad is not telling us how he's going to pay for this because it's a massive tax cut that needs to be paid for somewhere. And he won't say how he's going to pay for it. And the other problem with it is that he says he's only going to fund $3.5 billion over 3 years or 5 years. But he also does not tell us, or he says that he's going to, two million households in BC, right? Like, because we have a population of about 5 million. So there's 2 million households. 900, if you gave every renter, which is about 1 million renters in the province, the tax break, that's going to be $900 million right there. And he's projecting that he's only going to spend $900 million for the first year. So I don't understand how he's going to make that, like the math, like we always say, the math ain't mathing. And that's the issue that the experts are pointing out with the problem, is that the math ain't mathing. So it's, and the other thing too, is that he's not planning to address affordability in the housing market. Like he wants to scrap all of the housing initiatives that the BC NDP has put forward. And he wants to do free market like we were before under the BC Liberals. And so there's going to be no, he's not planning to temper rents or temper housing costs. What he's planning to do is give you more money in the form of a tax credit, but that's not going to help somebody who has to switch from, like for us, we're renters. And if we have to move and go back out into the market right now, what we're looking at that's comparable to what we're renting now is going to cost us $2,000 to $3,000 more a month. So the tax credit's all great and everything. But if rents are still going up and housing prices are still going up, that's not going to solve anything, in my opinion. So while I think that the policy sounds really sexy, and it sounds like it's, I think it's pandering to a degree. And I'm concerned that he's not telling us how he plans to fund it, because there's only three ways that you can fund a massive tax cut like that. There's only three ways you can fund a massive tax cut like that, is that you got to cut services in some other area. raise taxes, or I can't remember what the third one was, but none of them are good for the people of BC. That's what I'm trying to say, is that it's not going
Selling capital,
to,
maybe?
what's that? Selling
Selling
capital might be
capital.
another one, yeah. And none of those are good options, because we see right now how the lack of crown corporations, like how privatization has really hurt us as a country and as a province, right? Privatization has hurt us terribly because we have no control over TransLink. We have no control over BC Ferries. They're both a mess. So how is he going to pay for this tax cut, and how is he going to keep it at $900 million? Because like the article that I was reading pointed out, we have a million renters who are all getting the tax credit is $900 million in the first year. So what about the people who have mortgages? How much is that going to cost? And then somebody else also brought up another good point. What about the people who have already paid off their mortgages or divested of their mortgages? They don't get a tax break, and it suggests that it's means tested. So what are the means that are tested? We know that it's not for anybody
I knew
under
you were going to bring that up.
245,000. Yeah, it's under 245,000. But again, the language that he's got on the website is so vague that it says eligible house costs. Well, what are those? Who qualifies? Who's going to qualify? And those are the things that are very concerning about what he said. Go ahead.
So I think that the vagueness in which his idea is presented, I think that that is very intentional. I don't think he has a plan on how to pay for it. If it's me, and if I'm trying to get people to really believe that I'm serious about this, I'm bringing an economist with me. I'm bringing somebody to back up, or I'm going to refer to somebody in that industry to back up that what I'm promising is feasible. Because every single person who's talking about this, except the people who are just cheering about it and then not considering that, like, if it's too good to be true, it usually is. And if you're not explaining how you're going to make this work, you're just saying, just trust me. Just trust me, bro. I'm gonna put $1,700 back in everybody's pockets and not saying how you're gonna do it. And then when you're asked how you do it too, again, very vague, not promising anything. So my opinion on this is that it's an empty promise. I think he's getting everybody's hopes up. I think that if the unthinkable thinks and he gets in and people say, okay, where's our credit? I think we're going to hear a lot of excuses afterwards. I think those are probably already thought up. And I don't think how you're going to make this work has been thought up. Otherwise, there would be at least one expert in our province talking about how this is feasible. And there isn't. There's just a ton of people saying, we don't know how he's going to make this work. And he won't tell us.
Well, and the other
Pardon
part
me.
of that is that the big chunk that's missing is any kind of measure to stop rents from going up exponentially, or because I know that he wants to take off rent cap. I know that he wants to build baby build, but he wants the private sector. He stated government has no business in housing. So he's planning to keep on keeping on. But that $1,600 a month that he's promising for every family, what if you have to go back out into the market and rent again? And now rents are $2,000 or $3,000 higher than what you are walking away from for whatever reason. That's not going to help. It's
I
not
think
going to do
such a
anything.
fantastic point because you can promise the rebates, the credits, right? You can promise people to put $1,700 back into their bank accounts every year. And when you're talking about saving it off of what? Off of what we're paying rent right now? Or what we'll be paying in rent if you take the caps off? If you take the caps off, you're not telling me that the majority of landlords aren't going to try to capitalize on that and jack the sh out of their rents. Come on. So you can't talk about one without the other, but except he's not talking about the other. Sure,
Well,
you're
and
saving
that's it.
money, but you aren't saving overall. You're saving or you're getting some more money back, but if you're paying out more, you aren't saving anything. And he's missing that part.
And
We should make a
it
video
just
about that. That's an important part.
it is a really important part. And the other thing that I find is that it's just there's no depth to what he's saying. It's all very vague. It's all very pie in the sky. And there's no way, like, he's not telling us how he's going to
Isn't
get
that the
there.
conservative way?
Yeah,
You got all
exactly.
they have going. Nope, I have a plan. I have a plan. I have a plan. You don't get to hear it until like right
Yeah.
before the election, though. Even
Yeah.
though I'm going to call for an election every second freaking day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's
He's
it.
calling
And
for an
like,
election right away and then saying, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do until we're close to the election. Well, according to you, sir, we're close to an election all the time.
yeah, exactly. Well, and Mike Bernier, who was a BC United MLA, he's the one from North Van that's been very outspoken about what Kevin Falcone did to the MLAs and how this all went down. And he said, you know, he a direct quote from him, if you think that they're making it up as they go along, you'd be right. And that's what this feels like. This is just like, what can we throw at the wall that's going to sound really sexy, that's going to get us noticed, and then we'll work out the details later. And if we can't follow through on the election promise, well, oh well, we'll distract them with something else.
And how, what's the word I'm looking for? So for lack of a better adjective, douchey. How
Yeah.
douchey is it to have a plan that involves probably eliminating rent caps and then start your campaign from a homeless encampment? Here's a guy who's going to make it arguably more expensive for people to
Yeah.
rent.
Yeah.
And he's promising something different from between the tents at Crab Park.
Yeah. And I wonder if they even bothered to get the permission of all those people in Crab Park that they caught on camera. Like, that's the thing, you know,
Here's the thing,
like
though.
this.
You tell those guys, you know what? I'm going to give you $1,700 a year to find a place.
Yeah.
If this happens, if this works, sure, everybody be saying yes,
Yeah.
right? Because
And
nobody
the other.
down there is probably asking. Like if they're just like, and the reason I say down there, and I don't mean just down there, I mean anybody who's applauding this, and
Yeah.
anybody that whose the reactions we saw are the people who are applauding it,
Yeah.
like on X Twitter, like the people who are applauding, like none of them are saying how, none of them
Yeah.
are saying how,
Well, and
and.
you know what? And it sounds sexy. Like, when I read it off to my
Sure.
husband last night, who's not really into politics and stuff, he's like, "Hey, that sounds kind of good." And I said, "But hold up. Here are the problems with it." And he's like, "Yeah, well, that figures, right?" Like, it's,
Fine print.
yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the other part of that too is that he's not planning to house the houseless. Like,
Yeah.
there's nothing in that platform to house the houseless. There's nothing in that platform to deliver middle income homes, right? There's no plan. He wants to stop all crown and government involvement in the housing market. And he wants to let it, you know, he wants to go free enterprise, which is how we got here to begin with.
Yes. Yeah. It's a very pro-capitalism approach, but really, if you let it just all go, like it sounds good on paper, right? So
Yeah.
if you're a conservative supporter and you're very frustrated with, and you should be frustrated with how much it costs to live in this province. You should be.
Absolutely.
I don't mean to go on a side road to another province, but I was looking at real estate in Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
The difference of what you can get
Yeah.
oceanside or lakeside on acres in Nova Scotia is what you get for a condo here, man. A
Yeah.
condo. It's
However,
insane.
yeah, however, it's only one piece of the puzzle because Nova Scotia doesn't have the economic robustness that we have, or the potential for economic robustness, because they're part of the Atlantic Canada have-not provinces, right? And so, you know,
Yeah.
I mean,
But
I
I
hear what
was
you're
talking to,
saying.
I'm just saying about how ridiculously overpriced we
Oh
are.
yeah,
Even okay,
absolutely.
if we take Nova Scotia off it, I had a friend who was a BCer her entire life, and she
Yeah.
just recently moved to Saskatchewan, and
Yeah.
she can't stop posting about how cheap everything is
Yeah.
and like the size of her house for what she got. Like she got a
Yeah.
nice house here too.
Yeah.
She's got a freaking castle, man.
Yeah.
Not a
Oh yeah.
Saskatchewan castle.
I used to watch all HG. There was a couple of years where I was just absolutely obsessed with HGTV. And because I was taking interior design courses and things like that, and I was looking at starting up an interior design business, but I didn't. Another story for another time. But I used to watch HGTV, and I would cry almost at the price of housing. I
Yeah.
would be watching people. I would watch these shows where they were picking up houses for like 15,000, 20,000,
Yeah.
50,000. And I'd be like, if I could do that, like my friend, you know, and I remember when houses here were under 100,000. That's
Yep.
the thing. Like in my lifetime, houses were under
Yes.
100,000
Yeah.
in this province. And
And
now they're
now
over a million.
you're not getting a house like a standalone house
No.
under a million. Like you are
No.
maybe if you go like way out to the even if like even Chilliwack, even out in the valley,
Yeah.
those prices have and those have you seen the property increases? Hold on a second. Now I got to go on a bit of a rant. So what we saw in property values was places like Maple Ridge and Chilliwack increased by like 30%,
Yeah.
jacked out of it. So all these people who live there, they're like, "Wow, look at me! I'm a millionaire now. My house was only worth this much. Now it's worth a third more
Yeah.
in a year."
Yeah.
And then I think that people make financial decisions based on that, not realizing that that's vulnerable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways,
Well, and that and
I'll go on a tangent if you let me. So
that No, but
don't let
that
me.
and that's an excellent point too, is that we and I made a TikTok about this a couple of days ago, where we have messaged that housing is a piggy bank. We have
Yeah.
messaged that housing is a retirement fund. We have messaged that in order to build wealth in this country, you have to do it with housing.
Yeah.
And
And I think
now
that's
we're,
very dangerous because
yeah.
the majority of our generation,
Yeah.
I honestly have no idea how old you are, Maple, but the majority of Sherry and I's generation have their retirement plan in their house. And it's their only plan. There's a lot of people who, it's okay, I own my house. It's okay, I own my house. And look how much my house is worth compared to how much I bought it, 25 years ago. And it's their only plan. So if anything happens to the housing market and everybody in Gen X has their eggs in the same basket, and that basket, something happens to the basket, you have an entire generation going broke at retirement age at the same time. Who's going to take care of them? I'm just saying, it's risky. It's risky.
It's absolutely risky. Yeah.
I
So,
also want to talk about affordability in general. And we talked about landlords. Like 20%, one in five houses is owned by somebody who doesn't need a house
yeah.
because they already own another house.
I don't know if you caught it the other day. I went toe to toe with somebody who was whining at me that they had to move their three Airbnbs from Airbnb to long-term rentals, and he wanted me to feel sorry for him.
Yeah, I know. When and if you look at the effect that Airbnb had on the rental market, like you have to do something to fix it, right? But there's so many places in BC. I know there's a couple on the island. I think up in Kelowna, where they're just like the mayors of these cities are just going, no, we're gonna lose our
Sunshine.
we're gonna lose too much money, so we're not gonna make them do it. The
Yeah,
rich
I
guys,
know.
we don't want the people who can afford, who have multiple places of residence. We don't want
Yeah.
them to lose any money
Yeah.
to help the people that can't afford to live anywhere.
Yeah. And then they turn around and blame the people who can't afford to live anywhere for being poor,
Yeah.
right? When
Yeah.
in
Pull up
fact,
your bootstraps.
yeah.
It's
But
always been
anyways,
that way. It's always been
hold
that
on.
way. Like when I
Yeah.
was
Oh, but
younger and a single mom, they do that. It's like they create people. They create
obstacles.
problems.
They
Yeah.
create challenges because the comfort of the rich depends on the abundance of poor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they,
That was deep. That's not mine. I it
stole it. I'm quoting They get
somebody.
mad at
I
you
just
for
forget.
not
I'm just
succeeding.
forgetting who I'm quoting, but did
Yeah.
you like my little taking credit moment there?
Yeah.
But yeah, you're absolutely right, Polly. You're absolutely right. Like that's what happens is that they create the problems, and then when you try to fix the problem, they blame the poor people or the people who are disadvantaged for having the problem. Like, what's wrong with you? You can't afford a $2 million house,
Yeah, or go
right?
get
Like,
a job.
yeah, go
Yeah.
get it. Like Doug Ford today or yesterday, did you guys
I
catch
was
that?
waiting. I was waiting for my opportunity to jump in and say, I know this is a BC podcast, but can we all just be super grateful that we're not in Doug Ford's province telling these
Well,
guys to just get off their ass and get a job?
yeah, and that's kind of what a BC Conservative government would be, right? Because there is nothing in that platform to help anybody who's houseless. Whereas the NDP, I just did a video yesterday on the housing. They've actually got 4,800 houses, shelters for the houseless. Like they're putting houseless people in supportive housing. They're building supportive housing. They've got pilot projects for supportive housing. And their goal is to get, David Eby's goal is to get everyone off of the street into a safe home at a safe shelter so that they don't have to be on the street. And
Do
they,
you think he can do it?
I
I want
think
him to
that,
do it,
yeah,
but
well, you know what? I think that all the politicians that have, I think we're cynical because we've had so many politicians come along and say they're going to fix homelessness. You know, Gregor Roberts, I'm going to solve homelessness in 1 month.
by
You
clean
know, or
guy.
the guy who was in Burnaby there who was going to solve homelessness. I can't remember the mayor who that was. And then there was the one in Coquitlam that said that they were going to solve like
Yeah.
it's
But we
not.
just seem like I've lived in this province since 1985. I
Yeah.
moved from Ontario in 1985, and I remember there's always been homelessness in this city, always.
Yeah.
But in 85, it was like just Pigeon Park and like just Main and Hastings. And now you have it's growing. It's growing,
Well,
it's spreading. And so
actually,
I think that's where a lot of the cynicism comes from too, not just that people promise to fix it and then they don't. It's we're not just not seeing it fixed, we're seeing it get worse.
Yeah, well, and that's it, and it's creeping into other neighborhoods. And one thing we really like in BC is we like gentrification, right? We like to gentrify and we like to keep our unsavory citizens in one area where
Yeah.
nobody can see them, right? And
Yeah.
so and we talk about them in very disparaging, and that's the other part too, is you have to have public buy-in in order to help the houseless people. You have to have public buy-in, and if the public looks down their nose at them and thinks that they're, you know, not worth the effort or whatever, like the stigma attached to the people who are in distress, if the public doesn't want to support that, then they're just going to vote out any politician that's trying to do anything about it.
I agree. I think there's also a certain section of society that's just plain selfish and greedy. They
Yeah.
just don't want to share. They don't believe that it's their duty to, hey man, if that guy doesn't have money, that has nothing to do with me. I'm just
Yeah.
here to take care of me and my family, and that's it. And I think that there's always going to be people like that. But I believe that if there was more empathy amongst the general public, amongst people who aren't going to dig in their heels and say, no, absolutely not, I'm not going to help a stranger.
Yeah.
If we were to develop more empathy for strangers and stop, derogatory language towards people who are disadvantaged, which puts up a barrier to empathy. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. You know, when
And
I
I
was
agree with
down
you. I
in,
think it's public support's the only way that it happens. It's only
yeah.
it's the only way to get past the greedy people. And I'm not talking about the politicians. I'm talking about the people who are going to vote for people who are going to protect their own
Yeah.
money instead of, the people, the lazy people.
Well,
Their words, not mine.
in the last three, in the last week, I've gone toe to toe with three wealthy people. One was in mining and had a business and was whining at me about having to pay the employee health tax for his business. But that only applies to businesses over $1 million and 20 and over 25 employees. And I'm like,
Oh
dude.
no, I have a $1 million business with over 25 million employees. I can't afford
Yeah,
this.
yeah. And it's like, and he's telling me that removing MSP premiums from me was a problem for him. And I should
Why was
feel
it a
bad
problem for
about
him?
that because
Why?
he has to pay the employer health tax because that's how they funded the MSP thing was
Right.
by
I
offloading
understand.
the cost. The NDP believes in corporations and 1% footing the bill. That's what they believe in. And that's why I know we're talking about housing today and we'll talk about carbon tax further, but that's why EB, and that's what he did about the carbon tax, because the NDP voted against that in 2008 because they don't believe that the average person should have to foot the bill for the services in the province.
Yeah.
And the conservative way is to make the middle class and the workers and stuff pay for it while protecting the corporations because the corporations will take care of the employees, which never happens.
It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen.
But we'll talk
It would
about
be
that. We'll
nice.
talk
It
about it more
should
in depth.
happen. It should happen. But there's a gap between the way things should be and the way things really are. And yeah. Also, that's Jugmeet Singh's thing too, of when he said, about the carbon tax too. He is more make the stronger guys pull the heavier loads so that the individual guys don't have to. Also, there's something funny going on Twitter right now about how Jagmeet Singh's going to lose his seat, and they're showing Burnaby Central polling numbers. It's funny. All these guys from Ontario talking about it.
Polling numbers for Jagmeet. Well, and that's
for Burnaby Central, and I'm like, solid reporting, man.
Well, and that's the other thing too, is that people are very confused about this election. I was arguing with a guy yesterday. I'm not voting for the NDP Liberals. And I said, well, that's great, because there's no Liberal Party in BC.
Yeah. There's so many people who have said something about not voting Liberal in BC. And I think that they're getting it confused with the Federal Party, because, there is a lot of election talk, and it could be confusing between provincial elections and federal elections. And it's definitely confusing between a federal Liberal Party and a BC Liberal Party.
Yeah.
Which we talked about.
Oh yeah. Like it's just it like
confusing, because, and the reason I'm laughing about Burnaby Central is that isn't Jagmeet Singh, is Burnaby South. And Burnaby South was recently reconfigured, and it's I can't remember the name of it right now. But anyways, he's not against, like, it's not that the riding that it changed to has somebody looking after it right now too. I don't believe he's in danger of losing his seat, especially considering how much he's won his seat for in the last like three elections, just saying. Anyways.
So I've been looking at, I did a thing about the housing. I looked at the NDP 30 point, I don't know if you've seen it, the 30 point housing plan.
And I saw your video. It's a good video.
Pretty ambitious. Like, it's pretty ambitious, but you know what's really interesting is I'm seeing so much building happening. My husband and I went out to the farmer's market, the pop-up farmer's market in Surrey, the one that's being organized through TikTok. We went out on Sunday to check it out, and we came back. We drove through Oak Ridge. There's a 90-unit rental building almost complete. Yeah. There's another, I think it's 110 units on the corner of Canby and
they ripped up Canby. Like they we knew this was coming for a while. My I have friends in the area.
Yeah.
And like I would go and visit them, and like the entire street, you're gonna see it too, behind the Grandview Superstore along Broadway.
Yeah.
Like you have about three blocks in a row where every single house is for sale. So I think that somebody's going to buy all those up. But then it comes to another thing too. Okay, so we've replaced, let's say, 10 houses with something that can house 100 people, say. These aren't the real numbers, but we're increasing the amount of people who density can live in one space.
Yeah.
The problem is we're not putting anything to protect who's buying the building for the 100 people.
And that, yes. And that is something too, is that I have been on and on and on about this, that nobody, no government is protecting supply from investors.
Exactly.
And that is like the NDP way was to add a bunch of taxes to prevent the action. So we've got a house flipping tax, and we've got the speculative tax, and we've got the empty homes tax. And then we've got the fines for Airbnb. So we've got all of that, but we don't have, and we've removed, we've increased transparency. So you can't hold property behind a numbered company anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And they've increased transparency in the housing market to combat the billions with a B that was laundered and is continuing to launder through our housing market.
Yep.
Thank you, BC Liberals. Thank you, Kevin Falcone. Thank you, John Rustad.
Yeah, but same John Rustad. Same John Rustad, in case anybody's paying attention. Same John Rustad.
Yeah. It just blows my mind that all of these people are supporting these two when they were part of they did so much damage.
Yeah.
Like, it just blows my mind. Blows my mind.
It blows my mind that Rustad will talk about how the BC Liberals did something. And I'm like, dude, that's you.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird to blame another political party that you were part of at the same time and not admit that you were there.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like me blaming me It's
Well,
weird.
so was he being authentic then, or is he being authentic now? Like,
Exactly.
right? Was he really a moderate conservative, or was he a right winger, heavy right winger hiding out in a liberal party? And if you're doing that, then like how ethical are you?
And his vaccine position, since he was very vocal about changing it, that's all over the internet too. And there's a lot of people who are saying it's going to help him. There's a lot of people who's going to say it's hurting. I think it's going to hurt him, but
Well, I think it's going to hurt him too, because I was looking at 338 this morning and they've already dipped a point.
oh
They've
yeah.
already dipped a point, yeah, in the aggregate. Now, 338 is the one I always go to. I don't generally go with singular polls because it depends on what questions are asked and what the polling size is and how specific the questions are and what information they're trying to get out of the poll. That all and it's and when so when it's singular, it's really about what the pollster is trying to get an answer for. But when you look at 338, it's an aggregate of all the polls.
Right.
So it takes them all, it uses a calculation to average it all out to get their information. They've got about an 85% accuracy rate, I think. But it was really interesting. Somebody pointed out yesterday, I was reading, like he's going after Dr. Henry.
Yeah,
He's
of
going
course he is.
after Bonnie Henry.
Of course he is.
And we should actually get back on topic of
Okay.
housing after I say this, right?
I know, that's usually my job. I'm failing.
So apparently, Dr. Henry has an 85% approval rating. She's got the highest public figure approval rating across Canada for a
I
public
remember
figure.
Olivia Munn, the actress, was retweeting Bonnie Henry's tweets during the pandemic.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah, and she's
But
like in
yeah,
Los
she's
Angeles
got
or
the
something.
highest approval rating out of any public figure, a politician or public health officer or anything. She's got a higher public approval rating than any other public figure across Canada and who works for the public service. And they're saying that could really hurt him, because while his base, she's got a negative 17% approval rating with the base, because his base is anti-vaxxers and
Right.
anti-maskers. It's not a true reflection of how the rest of British Columbians feel about her.
And I don't think that all conservatives think like that. I
No.
think that by expressing that, and I think the NDP did it to remind the small C conservatives or
Yeah.
any conservatives who were okay with the vaccination. I think it alienates them from supporting Rustad. I don't necessarily believe that it will encourage them enough to vote NDP, but
No.
if it encourages them to not vote,
Yeah.
like, and I've heard a lot, and I believe that everybody should vote. Even if you disagree with me,
Yeah.
I think you should be going to the polls. So I am not personally discouraging anybody.
No.
I'm just saying that something that I've heard in the federal conversation is how people can't bring themselves to vote for Trudeau, but they also won't vote for Pierre. So there's a lot of
Yeah,
people
it's a
talking about
third.
simply not voting.
It's a third of voters federally that feel houseless. But what's really interesting here is that a lot of the BC United MLAs decided to go independent. They're really mad. They're really mad at Kevin Falcone, because not only did he screw them over by collapsing the party, he screwed them over by using all the donation money to print materials and advertisings and ads and stuff for a campaign. So he used the donations to buy campaign literature and stuff, and they can't use it because it says BC United on it.
Right. So it's total waste.
It's total
Well,
waste
because I
of money.
remember when people asked him in the spring, he said, well, you can't, he said, doing it like, I think it was 5.5 months away at the time. He said, doing it this far out is, it's completely, can't do it. And then he
Yeah.
does it like, what, like 7 weeks or 8 weeks away?
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah, and
Yeah.
now you've got, and now you've got, and then they went ahead and they, like, we're so far off of housing at this point. Sorry,
I
folks, if you
know,
tuned in
but
for
I'm enjoying the
housing.
conversation. I hope everybody else is. And I'm sorry that we didn't stay on topic, but we also haven't talked in 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
Making up for lost time.
what's really interesting is that Falcone stepped down as leader of the BC United Party, agreed to throw his support behind Rustad, became now there's no BC United. They were gonna keep the BC United Party. And then they first off he said, no, we're going with Rustad. Then he says, no, we're gonna keep the BC United Party so we can have the party still. And some of the independents can still run in that. And then on September 20th, it was like right before the writ dropped. Sorry, we're folding the BC United
My
Party.
day before,
Yeah.
just so everybody's aware, it was the day before. So in BC, September 21st is the day
Yeah.
that you can officially start campaigning. So
Yeah.
these other guys thought that they were going to can't be campaigning in a certain way, and then the day
Yeah.
before they started, he goes, "No,
Yeah.
no, change my mind. Sorry, I
Psych.
know I said something else before, but I changed my mind. Sorry." Actually, he didn't even say sorry. He
No,
just
he
did.
didn't. He didn't. And so actually, when I was looking at the roster of candidates last night for all the different ridings, there is more independents running now than we've ever seen in a BC election.
So interesting.
So the people who are small C conservative will vote independent,
Yeah. And
and it'll
then,
split the vote on the right anyways,
yep.
which is what they were trying to
That's
avoid.
what they were trying to avoid. That's the whole reason that Falcon said, okay, we're going to step back so that all of the votes will go to the conservatives. And now half of his guys went, yeah, I'm not down with that. Perhaps he should have checked with his guys first. I don't
Well, and what he
know.
did too, what they did too was they bullied people out of their ridings, or they
Yeah.
tried to bully people out of their ridings. They
Or offer them extra money.
overrode riding offices, like the managers of the riding offices. The riding association is supposed to vet the candidate. And he and Kevin sat there with like a checkerboard. Like, I envision the two of them sitting there like you do when you're planning a wedding, when you're planning a wedding and you're trying to decide where everybody's going to sit in the seating chart. Like, this is
Yeah.
what they were doing. And even Sonia Firstuneau called them out, called it checkerboard politics. And it's
Yeah.
highly unethical and highly immoral.
I saw another creator from another province talking. I can't remember who it was, but it was about people running in ridings that they don't even live in.
Yeah, parachute. Yeah, parachute
Yeah.
candidates. I don't agree with that at
I
all.
don't agree with it either. I think that
No.
I want the person looking after me to live here. I
Yeah.
want them to understand what it's like in my area. Right.
Yeah.
And I think and I know that I know we talk, said we talk about housing, but oh, we're already not anyways. I think
Yeah.
that I already think that Evie's challenge is like even if the vote is split between independents and conservatives, I think that Evie has work to do in rural BC and northern
Yes.
BC. I
Yes.
think I like he shouldn't even be talking
Yeah.
to us. Like we're a given. I
Yeah.
think. And
Yeah.
I think that a lot of the things that we talk about here too,
Yeah.
because we're city people, we don't
Yeah.
understand what the
No.
people in like the Okanagan or in northern BC, we don't understand
Well,
why
and
they don't like NDP
yeah,
because our
and
worlds
see,
are
and
different.
this is always, sorry to overtalk you, this is always a problem with leftist parties. They're not good at getting out the information to the constituents that are the most upset. Like the
Yeah.
interior, what I'm hearing from people in the interior is they don't care about us. We have no health care. We have no doctors. There's no money being allocated up here. We have no infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But when you drill down into the facts, like I was looking at the health care one, I did a video where I was talking about all the bonuses, all the pay structures and stuff, and the things that they're doing to attract healthcare workers to British Columbia. Since the beginning of 2023, they've hired over 14,000 nurses in British Columbia. They have a bonus for doctors and nurses, a healthcare bonus for them to go up to the interior to work and live. There's no reason why. Like, they're offering a $20,000 bonus for nurses to go up to the interior to
And
work.
I don't know why the interior is struggling so much. The interior is a desirable place to live. It's not like
Yeah.
it's a crappy place to live.
No.
They call it God's country. Like they do. It is. I'm wondering if, because in that area too, they were very vocal about against the vaccination and against healthcare workers, more so in that area than we saw in the city. Do you think that that deters? We're totally talking about healthcare instead of housing. But I remember saying that a while ago. I said, like, aren't you afraid of scaring away all of the teachers and doctors by shitting on teachers and doctors all the time? Especially if you're in a small town. If you're in a small town and you're protesting teachers and doctors all the time, like, who's going to teach your kids and who's going to fix you when you're sick? I wouldn't go there. If I knew you were just going to protest me all the time, I would take a job in somewhere where they're not going to do that to me.
Well, and why
Just my
would you even
thoughts.
go into that industry after
Yeah.
everything you've seen and after all the rhetoric you're seeing and the fact that the governments, conservative governments, fight with you, like
Yeah.
they go after you, like your employer is always trying to oppress you. Why
Yeah.
would you go into that industry? So,
Yeah.
but in the interior as well, the problem is that a bunch with the housing prices, so to kind of circle it back to housing, and we can talk more about the NDP housing plan next time. But to circle it back to housing, when the housing crisis happened down here, and that's another thing I argue with Canadians in other provinces about all the time, they're just like, well, it's Trudeau's fault. And it's like, no, we were in a housing crisis in the 2000s under a conservative government at the federal and provincial level. We were already there. We are the canary in the coal mine here in BC. And what you guys are all experiencing now, we experienced 5 years ago. We're on the other side. We've gone through this. We are on the other side. To circle it back to housing, when the prices went out of control down here, lots of people cashed out and they went up to the interior.
Yeah. Oh,
My
yeah. Or
aunt
the
and
island.
uncle,
Yeah. Or other provinces like Alberta and Saskatchewan.
or they went to places like my parents did up on the Sunshine Coast or onto Vancouver Island. And I was having a discussion with somebody yesterday who was, well, rents haven't come down on Vancouver Island. And it's like, well, because you're the last area that prices skyrocketed in.
Yeah.
Vancouver is seeing rents coming down because we were the first to
Yeah.
go, like, for our housing market to go wild, right? So we're going to see the easing here first, and then it'll be the next place, and then it'll be the next place. But the truth of the matter is that rents are down 6% in Vancouver, and housing prices are softening about 30% out in the valley.
Let me ask you something. What's your opinion on co-ops?
I think that this is another area where the BC Liberal government really let us down by refusing to invest in co-ops, and they just stopped, right? Like, we used to have quite a bit of robust, we had very robust co-ops and
But we still have
subsidized
them. We
housing.
still have the ones that were grandfathered in, but they stopped creating them.
Well, but they also stopped fixing them. And so the ones that were grandfathered in didn't get the maintenance dollars, and they let them fall into disrepair to make the case that they were unlivable, and therefore they needed to be torn down, and we can sell the land. And
Yeah.
that's what they did.
You
They
think
let
that's
the
what they're
left.
doing to SROs? Because they don't
Yeah.
fix the SROs either. And that's
Well, in
arguably the
SROs,
most expensive real estate in our city.
I think that the Sahotas should have had their SROs seized by the
I think
city of
so too.
Vancouver.
I think
It
so
should have
too.
been seized. They should have been
If
seized like
anybody
a
doesn't know what
decade
we're
ago.
talking about, SRO stands for single room occupancy.
Yeah.
It's for the society that is most vulnerable to poverty.
Do you have many on the where you are, Polly? Do you have many SROs there?
Oh, my son, I don't know how many there are here, but I know my son did go into one of those.
Okay.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he got
Yeah.
ripped off. Like
Yeah.
the woman
Well,
didn't
they're.
like him and she's like, "You need to move out now." And so I had to arrange with her to do it because they're not covered by the landlord and tenant board here.
Oh,
As long as
interesting.
if you share a kitchen with your
Yeah.
landlord, it's not covered by the landlord and tenant board. At least not back then it wasn't.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That is
Interesting.
interesting. Kind of shady.
Yeah, kind of shady.
Yeah,
Kind
because
of
she moved
shady.
them all in. She took his damage deposit and everything, and then she was like, "I want you out." And I'm like, "Oh, we're gonna fight this in landlord tenant board." And so I went and they're like, "Oh, we don't cover that because you share a kitchen with your landlord."
Yeah.
And she knew it. And so then I had to like kiss butt to at least get his damage deposit back. I'm like, "We'll move out in such and such time if you give the damage deposit back. Otherwise, we're not moving out."
Now that's something that the NDP has addressed in their housing plan, is getting damage deposits back in a timely manner. And because you can, if you have a crap landlord, they can withhold that damage deposit for any reason. And then you got to go back to, so you don't have that money to go and put it down on a new place to live until you go to the landlord tenant board to get the money back, right? Like if you have to take them to the landlord tenant board, and I know lots of people have had to do that. They're also supposed to give you interest on your damage deposit, which a lot of people don't know,
That's
but they're
right.
supposed to pay you interest, and very, very few do. But you know, I think that we're going to see, I don't know if we're going to see a renter's strike or not. We might. We had one in the 70s, you know, in Vancouver. That's how the Vancouver Tenants Union was born. Back in the 70s, you could not vote in the city of Vancouver unless you
That's
owned
right.
land,
That's right.
right? Which blew my mind when I found that out.
Yeah.
And so landlords were being really predatory. And people, they were really, really predatory in the city of Vancouver. And so the tenants union formed and they went on strike and they refused to pay their rent. And until the politicians intervened and did something to help renters and to put in rent caps and to allow renters the right to vote. So, and I do, one thing I like about the NDP is that they do have a couple of renters in their caucus.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Adrian Dix is a renter, and Spencer Herbert Shandro is a renter, and I think there's one other one that's a renter. There's at least three of them in the caucus.
I think that's awesome because you don't understand the struggles of a renter unless you're a renter. I have no
Yeah.
idea. I haven't been a renter since the 90s. But and I like if I don't know anything about renting unless I talk to you.
Yeah. And I'm a renter because we thought that in the 2000s, after when we started having our family and stuff and business was moving, we thought, oh, yeah, no problem. We'll be able to get into a house within 5 years. And then
And then
all
it
hell
went,
broke. Yeah, all
yeah.
hell broke loose and that dream just kind of left, right?
Yeah.
So,
I'm very, very, very fortunate. I had good timing.
yeah.
We bought just before it happened,
Yeah.
which
And
honestly is just good luck. It
yeah,
is.
well, that's it. Like I said, I have friends who bought in White Rock around the hospital in the 80s, in the early 90s for $110,000, you know, a
Those
two or
things are
three
like,
bedroom bungalow
yeah,
in the 90s.
millions. Yeah.
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 And people don't understand. Like I remember doing a TikTok about housing prices in the 70s and wages and using inflation to show what they would be today.
Yeah.
And the different, like people don't really understand how out of touch housing prices are compared to wages. And we see, like, I still see some people who even vote liberal, who are older, who will blame people for younger people for not being able to afford a house. I saw somebody
Yeah.
actually the other day going after a creator who is saying that by 18, your kid should have $500,000 saved up in the bank account. What's wrong with you? Yeah, I'm not kidding.
Disconnect to
It
reality.
really, yeah, well, really, there's a real class war brewing, is what is happening. It's a capital, it's the capital class and the
But
asset class.
it's been happening since the 80s at least.
Yeah.
And the only reason I say 80s and not earlier is because of my age group, and I don't
Yeah.
remember like before the 80s, right? But you remember it was like it was pushed too. Greed is
Yeah,
good, right?
yeah,
Gordon
yeah.
Gekko, greed is good,
Yes,
and it
yeah.
pushed this have more than your neighbor sort of mentality and keeping up with the Joneses, and yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, and I think that there's rugged individualism that under that is the kind of the back like kind of underlies our society is very dangerous. And that's where we get people like that's where we've had it's allowed this predatory behavior in our housing markets to flourish. And then the idea of passive income became huge in the 90s, thanks to people like Scott McGillivray on HGTV and Holmes, what's his name? The guy Holmes, Holmes
The
on
bald guy.
Holmes. Yeah, Mike Holmes and Brian Baumgartner and all of those Canadian construction personalities and HGTV pushed this narrative of passive income. Well, what passive income is just exploitation. It's exploitation of other people, so you don't have to work as hard. That's all it is, right? And we had a fair share of that. And then on top of that, we had the money laundering issues in our real estate market, right? Which is B with a billion with a B. Like they tried to say that it didn't affect the market that much, the people who were anti-NDP. But it was in that if you drill down into the Cullen report, it's billions of dollars were laundered through our housing market.
Have you done a video about that?
I have a long time ago, but not recently.
If you find it, let me know. I think that there's a lot of people, like, first of all, there's a lot of people who don't realize that Rustad used to be a liberal, and that they're the same people. But there's also a lot of people who, when they talk about housing too, and they blame the NDP, and they're unaware of the Cullen report, they're unaware of the money laundering scandal. I think that should be something that we could highlight.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had a good look at the Cullen report. I haven't read it cover to cover, but I have read some of it. And it was very eye-opening. But the NDP too, like people have a lot of expectation around the NDP. And it's like, well, first off, hang on a second. They came to power in 2017 and they were part of an supply and confidence agreement with the Greens. So they had to work with the Greens and the Greens tempered. And funny enough, Andrew Weaver has come out and endorsed Rustad
Really?
over Sonia Fürstineau. Yeah. What a dick. Pardon my
That's a dick
language,
move.
but
That's a dick move.
it was a real dick move. Like he could have just kept quiet. But instead, he sold out his own party and basically made them like a non-starter in the in and you say what you like about the BC Greens, you got to give it to them. They never win. They never pick up more than a couple of seats, and yet they are there every election,
You can say the same thing about the federal Greens. I mean, and a lot of people talk about the federal Greens lately too. A lot of the circulation of Elizabeth May talking about why Pierre Poilievre or encouraging Mr. Poilievre to get a security clearance.
But anyway, so Andrew Weaver came out and endorsed Rustad. But John Horgan and Andrew Weaver were in a supply and confidence agreement until Sonia Fürstineau became the leader of the Green Party. And then she didn't want to work with Horgan. And riding high off of our COVID response, he decided to go for a majority and he got it. And you know what? He deserved the majority. I'm sorry. I will fight anybody over that. He deserved that majority. And then he got
You know
picked.
what? I like Horgan. I do. I like that he was a bit rough around the edges. When people talk about liking Trump because he doesn't sound like a politician, that's why I liked Horgan. Horgan, he was okay with dropping an F-bomb. He was okay with saying things that wouldn't make him popular. He just said it. Yeah, I liked him.
That part I like. I didn't like the fact that he went off and had got a coal job afterwards. Like I didn't, and to be honest, like he's not a solid socialist NDP. Neither is David Eby, really. Like David's
But
more
Eby's
socialist.
closer. Eby's closer, and he's done a lot of work in like human rights cases and stuff.
But he's more of a people first kind of person. Which I really appreciate. But Horgan deserved that. And then he got cancer. We had COVID, and then he got cancer. And he was out. And then we were recovering from COVID, trying to get the economy going again in BC. And then he was diagnosed with cancer again and stepped down, right? And then David Eby came up. So David Eby's only had 2 years.
I think
Go
that
ahead.
when he wins in October, I think he will get more credibility too. There's a lot of people pointing out that he wasn't elected, that he wasn't, that he's only our premier because of the Horgan replacement, that, you know, this isn't the guy that we elected. Or, well, after October, he will be the guy that we elected. So.
Well, and but you know, technically nobody votes for him other than the people in Point Grey. That's his riding, right? You know, like this is the argument I have with people. You didn't vote for Horgan either. You voted for your candidate in your riding. And you know what? And just to wrap up on that particular note, and this is something positive I want to say about the BC United. There is a BC United politician in Linton, the town that burned
Linton?
Down.
Linton. Yep.
Yeah, she's been the representative for Linton for 11 years. 11 years. And she was a BC United politician, and now she has no party supporting her unless she runs as a conservative. And she says, I just can't. But she loves her community, and she's fighting for Linton to get funding to rebuild.
To rebuild, yeah. They rebuild. When we talk about rebuilding, Lytton's the town that burnt down in the bad forest fires. And the reason it hasn't been built yet is they had to take a lot of time and do investigations and stuff. Like, I don't understand that. You know, it's a forest fire. Like, you know what?
Yeah. Well, and they found out that that's what it was, right? Nothing conclusive came out of the investigation. It was a forest fire.
Yeah.
It was an act of nature. But, you know, the thing that really strikes me is that her party really let down the constituents up there, because she's going to fight for them to get rebuilt.
Yeah.
Whereas when you parachute a candidate in there that's not from the community, that has no attachment to the community.
Is she still running as an independent?
I don't know. I have to look into it, but I was reading.
Because if
about
she
that.
Does, she probably has a better shot against somebody who's parachuting in, especially like if you're from Lytton and there's somebody who's fighting for it to be rebuilt versus somebody that doesn't know you. I think she's got a good shot. I hope she runs as an independent.
The only problem with independents, though, is that they don't get any staff. They don't have any staff. They don't have a whip. They don't have the funds that the other parties do. And they don't have the support of a party behind them.
I think that that's wrong. I think it should come with the job, not the party.
Yeah.
But that's just what I think. And it has been an hour.
Yes, it has been an
hour. It goes fast.
Yeah, it does
so
feel fast. And we apologize, guys. I know you probably tuned in to see housing, but you can... We touched on housing. If you follow me on TikTok, I just did a very in-depth video about the NDP housing platform.
I will repost it on the Maple Minds TikTok page. Actually, maybe we should upload it to the YouTube channel, too, because it's a really good video. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. But we will circle back and touch on the housing again, because I think that we need to talk about all of the things that they're doing and how they're building on Crown land around. We actually saw one of those transit hub builds happening on our way out to Surrey. This massive community center and apartments going up all over the place, et cetera. So,
cool.
Yeah, very much so.
All right.
Oh,
so,
and Polly, did you want to talk about something about a to do with Save the or a Million March, million
1 million voices for inclusion.
That's it. Thank you.
So we keep getting it confused because it's the 1 million March for Children, which is anti 2S LGBTQIA community.
Yes.
And then we're 1 million voices for inclusion. We're the opposite of them. So we're for the 2S LGBTQIA. One of our members has put forward a petition to the House of Commons being hosted, who is hosted by Randall. Can't remember his name. Garrison, I think. Randall Garrison.
Okay.
And it is to make all 2S LGBTQIA plus community and trans community to make all their rights permanent.
Okay.
That these governments can't use the notwithstanding clause. These provincial governments can't use the notwithstanding clause to take away their rights.
Okay.
So
that's a federal petition?
It's a federal petition to
it's petition number E4625.
Okay.
And I'll put it in the comments below. And if everybody could go and sign it.
It's to protect rights of LGBTQ in case there is a government that would be interested in using a notwithstanding clause to avoid all of the rights that have already been put in place for them.
Okay, great.
Exactly. And I'll put it in the comments.
Awesome.
Yes. And we will see you next Tuesday.
We will.
Oh,
see
I
you
shouldn't
next
say it like
Tuesday.
That. We're here every Tuesday at 1 BC time.
And I will bring you information about the rally and what I get up to at my writing. So anyways, have a good one, everyone.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Don't forget, everybody, that we will be live streaming the elections on October 9th.
Awesome. Very cool. All right.
Okay.
I'll be in Montreal, but I'll join in.
That'd be awesome.
I planned that poorly. I did. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'll be here.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.